Welcome to Breaking Down the Buzz, the podcast where we explore the thrilling world of tech industry leaders. From AI to the latest trends, we cut through the noise and decode the tech buzz and share our collective insights and insider knowledge. Welcome to Breaking Down the Buzz. In this episode, I'm thrilled to have Glenton Davis join us. From finance and law to the Canadian pop charts and tech innovation, Glenton's diverse career is a testament to adaptability and advocacy. Stay tuned for an inspiring conversation.
All right. Well, Glenton, thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Ro.
And coming to visit from Boston.
Yeah, so I really appreciate it. The invitation to come down to see you has just been amazing. And today, the sun is warm. The sun is bright.
I
forgot what it was like to have some southern sun, if I can call Richmond a southern city.
We're the capital of the Confederacy.
So we'll take it. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
And so I'm really glad to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we have a whole bunch of different questions.
Okay.
And if you don't like any of them, just say, Ro, back off.
Okay.
I don't want to answer that today.
It's fine. We just had a great lunch, so I'm ready for anything.
Yes. So I do refer to you as my son often. You aren't my son, but I do refer to you. We might be the same person.
I agree.
Determine that.
Yeah.
But you're young enough to be my son, and you've had a very diverse career. Like, your career has been amazing, and you're 38.
I am 38.
Now. Can you walk us through what you've done?
Oh, gosh, you know, I'll think about it in terms of what I consider myself to be really good at.
Okay.
Right. And then how that's played out through some of my experiences over my career. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I think over the course of my career, I've learned that I'm just really good at understanding customers and partners, right? And identifying problems, being able to fix those problems, as well as offer new solutions that generate revenue. And there's a model, you know, that looking back, or almost a kind of framework that I think has been used in my career. And I think of that as like an hourglass, right? And so my career has been all about sitting in the middle of an hourglass where I take in diverse sources of information, right? And that information is based on customers and partners and market context, right? In order to support or refute a hypothesis that I may have so that I could then generate a solution, right? That I disseminate down through the bottom of that hourglass, right? To customers and partners. And I first learned that, you know, oh gosh, it's been 15 years, right, since I graduated from college and started at JP Morgan as an investment analyst for the chief investment officer for the Global Asset Wealth and Management Division. And so it was that hourglass model that actually really helped JP Morgan, you know, drive transparency, grow AUM, right, during the great financial crisis, right? That was 2008, 2009.
Right.
And so I learned that very early in my career, and I've been applying it since then. So let's talk a little bit, you know, we'll go forward from, you know, the young days, you know, after getting a law degree and a business degree from Northwestern, I went to Microsoft for 5 years, right? That's where you and I met each other.
Yes.
I started, you know, working in the channel at Microsoft and built a solution that still exists today called Digital Marketing Content on Demand that helps about 17,000 partners every week.
Our team uses it every week.
Fantastic. Yes. Oh, I love hearing that. And so, and I also really appreciate going back in time when you all were part of our pilot, right? When it was under a code name. And so after doing that, I went and worked in security, right? I was a go-to-market lead for Microsoft's suite of security products.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a phenomenal job, being able to fly around the world, working with our customers, our partners, our global sales teams, right? And helping them understand the value proposition of cybersecurity and how it needs to be deeply embedded, right? Not only, right, as a matter of guarding an organization's data estate, but from code to cloud,
right?
And so all the way through application development. So that was really exciting. I then got asked to lead business development for Dynamics 365 Customer Care. That portfolio at the time consisted of Dynamics 365 Customer Service, Field Service, and Omnichannel. And the timing was fortuitous. My first day was March 1st, 2020.
Oh, I remember this.
Right? Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, what I did during my stint leading business development for those apps, right, was a ton of telephony deals. We built an ecosystem of telephony providers, right, that could integrate into those Dynamics software products, right, while Microsoft was working on a first-party solution now known as Azure Communication Services. And so how serendipitous, right, that right at the start of COVID, you get a job that requires you, right, to enable everybody to work from home, right? Enable all service to happen remotely. And so what a phenomenal experience. I then got asked to lead strategic partnerships at a Fortune 1000 company called Cibo Global Markets. And so I built that strategic partnerships function from the ground up as part of the firm's corporate strategy. We did two things there. First, you know, I looked after the company's largest commercial relationships, which is about $500 million in revenue. And then second, we used the strategic partnerships office, right, to frankly future-proof the company. And so, you know, a couple of things that we did, I'll talk about one that's really exciting, right, is that we, you know, kind of took the company into distributed ledger technology, mm-hmm. as well as asset tokenization, right? And those two, right, one, the technology, and two, the the procedure, right, that you can execute on that technology has been huge, right, as part of an organization called Cibo Digital. That was the result of a transaction that the corporate strategy team did right around the time of my arrival. And so that was a really wonderful experience, right, in, let's call it helping, right, senior leaders and executive teams have foresight, right? And taking that foresight and understanding that foresight may have uncertainty, right? But leaning into that uncertainty, mm-hmm. right? Based on what you know, again, about your customers, your partners, your market context, right? In order to offer something novel. And so that was a really, really exciting and rewarding experience. And then most recently, I ran strategy for MassMutual, which is a diversified financial services company based in Boston. And so that's what I've been up to.
I'd like to point out, 38 years old. You know, I know many people that would kill to have landed in any one of those roles, and that you've done that by the time you're 38 is unbelievable to me.
You know, I have a few gray hairs, for the work, and there are plenty of wonderful, you know, war stories in there, but I feel really fortunate because I follow my curiosity. I've been really fortunate to have advocates and sponsors across the course of my career, and that really matters,
right?
I think of sponsorship as being very different than a mentor. A mentor, right, is someone who gives you advice, right? It's very one way, right, in terms of how you're developing yourself. But a sponsor is someone who says, in exchange for you doing ABC for me over XYZ timeframe, I will lend you my brand in 1, 2, 3 ways, right, in order to help you succeed. And so I've been very lucky to have sponsors over the course of my career.
Right.
Yeah.
So I have a question that is different for
okay,
sure.
Okay, let's go for it.
So you didn't mention that you went to Yale, but you
did not. I did go to Yale.
Your law degree is from Northwestern.
Yes.
And you had a hit on the Canadian pop charts.
I did. So that was in all of this. Yeah. So we're going back to the beginning, right? We're going back to my analyst days. And you know, my first love has been music. So I started playing the piano when I was 4. And the folklore goes that my first words weren't mama or like dada. They were I'm bad from Michael Jackson's tune, right? And so I just love music, and I've been, you know, a fan of music, and I retreat into music. And so I was an analyst at J.P. Morgan, and in my scant off hours because of how busy we were, right, and what was going on in the market at the time, I would write, right, and perform music, and kind of downtown in Greenwich Village. I led a band, and you know, serendipity got, you know, one of my songs, "Go Get on the Floor," to Canada. I received a phone call, you know, from a PR kind of agent, and said, "Look, you know, there's something here, right? But we need to change it a little bit. And if you're willing to go back into the studio and make certain changes, I really think we could do something with this song." And so that was a really important early lesson for me on feedback, right? And kind of not being precious, right, about work in order to help it succeed. And so we did it. And then it did go to the Canadian pop charts. And I spent time touring around Canada and so hawking funny. Records and all that stuff.
You're Robin Sparkles.
I really am. And so in law school, right, I was, you know, someone said, oh, he's Robin Sparkles. And I hadn't seen How I Met Your Mother. And so I was like, why is everyone calling me Robin? All right. And what, and someone who's now become a really great friend, she took me aside and she's like, this show, Glinton, right? And your history. So,
yeah.
So that's perfect. The story.
It's perfect. I love that about you, because here's this super successful technology executive that had this side gig, really.
It's fun. Yes.
Just being a pop star.
It's super fun. And it kind of, so I can actually ground it in a book because I love to read, right? I think it's really important for all people, really, right, to lean into range. And so there's a book called Range by a guy named David Epstein. And he talks about, right, how in a world of increasing complexity, it's very important to have a portfolio of experiences and skills, almost tools, right, that you bring together in novel ways in order to solve what he calls unkind problems, right? A kind problem would be open heart surgery or landing a plane, right? You don't want me, right, doing open heart surgery on you, right? You want a true expert, right, a domain expert, right, who's done that. But in a world of unkind problems like climate change, right, like hunger, right, wealth inequality, right, it's very important that you have these diverse set of skills so that, you know, you're not the guy with the hammer thinking that everything is a nail.
Right.
And so that's been a real part of my professional identity as well as my professional philosophy.
Right. Yeah. That's amazing. I'm going to have to, what was it called? The book?
Range. By David Epstein. It's a great book.
Yeah. I will absolutely have to read that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pivot just a little bit.
Of course. All right, go for it.
I know that you are obviously pro-advocacy and
you've
been involved in DEI efforts. How have you incorporated your commitment to DEI into the various roles that you've had?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously being a black man in a gay black man in technology is
unique.
Like the unicorn.
It's unique.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I think, you know, a few ways. First, by daring to be myself, even when it's difficult, even when it's hard, even when it's painful.
Even when people don't want you to be.
That's right. And that's a very hard thing to do. And I often think about the weight, right, of authenticity, but it's so important, right? And it's so important that we find ourselves in places that support who we are fully. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's something that I've done. Right. It's just I've shown up as myself. Right. In every role that I've taken, in every environment that I've been in. And I've done that on purpose. Right. To make space and make room. Right. For others to also be their full selves. Right. And so, you know, let's go beyond sponsoring, you know, business resource groups or employee resource groups. You know, I've done all of that. I think it's important to be a mentor, a sponsor.
Right.
To those who do not see themselves, right, all the time in the workplace, because I tend to be the only one of me, right, into rooms that I walk into. And so it's been very important for me, right, to show these individuals, one, that it's possible, right, and two, that it's possible to do that, right, in a way that lifts you and lifts others up. Does that make sense?
And authentic.
Yeah.
I was very early in tech, and I was one of the few women in tech when I started in tech. And I always had this sense that in a lot of cases I was the token. You know, you knew that they needed to invite a woman to whatever thing it was. And that was really very difficult for me initially because I wanted to have people want me to be there for me.
As opposed
to doing the token.
Yes.
But then I came to the realization that there's power in that.
Yeah.
Because when I walked in the room, I was the only one of me in the room. And therefore, if I said something, all the heads were going to turn. And
that's right.
And they were going to pivot. And they were going to listen to me. And so I think that it's important and awesome that you were your true, authentic self. Because all those people, while you probably were the token in a lot of cases.
No comment.
you've been there.
I think you're exactly right on the right of the power of being the only one, and you know, being able to harness that power, right, to drive change, to manage friction in organizations, I think is a really, really powerful skill, and one that I've been lucky to cultivate and develop right through the roles that I've had.
That's awesome. So let's talk about technology for a bit.
Great.
So you have an extensive background in strategic roles in technology. I mean, this is still unbelievable to me, all you've done in your few years on this planet that you've had.
Yeah.
What do you think are the biggest technology advancements that are going to have an impact?
Well, you know, I'm going to take the layup, right? And talk about generative AI, right? I think it was Kathy Wood, right, who said that, you know, this next general purpose technology could generate something like $15.7 trillion in economic value over the next decade or so. And so you can't talk about emerging tech without talking about generative AI. What I'm really excited about for generative AI though, right, is the transition that it needs to take, much like electricity took,
right,
when it was first coming online. Right now we're seeing a lot of generative AI solutions, that are almost like point solutions. Right, so you insert them into existing workflows in order to automate, you know, more manual tasks. In order to repeat certain tasks, in a way to make more, in order to make things more efficient. Right, I think of that as almost like a cost efficiency thing. Right, the second stage, are like AI applications. Right, that help you make new decisions. Think about predictive analytics and marketing. What you understand about customers in order to provide the next best. For that customer. What's really going to be exciting, is when generative AI fundamentally rewires systems in the ways that businesses operate. There's, of course, a book. I'm always going to quote books called Power and Prediction that talks about this, And there's an early example of an AI system, that we can all use as a kind of exemplar when we're thinking about business models for the future. Spotify is a great early example of an AI system solution coming on market, specifically Discover Weekly, And what Discover Weekly did was fundamentally change the nature of playlisting, Previously, consumers listened to lots of songs and then chose, which songs, they wanted to listen to. They were making playlists themselves, But Spotify ended up learning so much about their customers, from this data and the quickness of their data feedback loop, so they could start shipping playlist to customers, without them having to playlist at all, And so Discover Weekly is this really, really wonderful example, of how AI as systems can fundamentally flip business models for the better based on what you know about your customer, and based on the data and feedback that you get about those customers, so that you can quickly, make a kind of a preemptive decision for them and fundamentally change the way in which you engage.
So as a musician, let's talk about that. Do you think that those algorithms are going to change things and introduce new artists that maybe you wouldn't necessarily have heard?
I'd like to think so. I am a believer, kind of in the 80-20 principle, let's say the 99-1 principle. And and I do think that the music industry, is one that is that still creates superstars, But superstars mean less than they used to, Because you are exactly right. We live in a world that's becoming incredibly niche because of what we can all do and kind of discover. What I'll even say as an independent musician is that Discover Weekly has been huge for me, Because folks from around the world, listeners from around the world, have discovered my tunes, Because of the algorithms, that are shipping these playlists, to listeners. And so that's been really powerful because in older worlds, a listener in the Netherlands would have had to know my name, in order to seek out my song and add my song to a playlist, With Discover Weekly, the algorithms know so much about that listener in the Netherlands. They can ship Discover Weekly and let the listener decide whether or not to save the song, But at least the song got the exposure.
Right.
Right. And so that's what's so powerful about it from a musician standpoint. Now, you know, we could talk forever about how streaming won't, you know, streaming does not make anyone rich stream by stream. Right. But what, you know, but when I think about business model and when I think about the power of generative AI, I think about those things.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's, to me, it's amazing. How do you see generative AI impacting DEI and things like bias?
So I believe that the output of technology and the output of algorithms and the output of, you know, generative AI is based on the input.
Right.
Not only across data.
Right.
But who's training the models.
Right.
Right. And so what that means is that it's really important, right, for organizations to make sure that they have diverse teams, inclusive teams that are training these models for bias.
Yeah.
It is also very important that we think about the regulatory, right, implications of generative AI. You know, I've worked in highly regulated industries.
Right.
Right. And so when thinking about generative AI and what that might mean for adverse selection, what that might mean for bias, we have to make sure that we're very thoughtful, right, about the ways in which we deploy it. Because as we just talked about, there's incredible power. But if we don't deploy it, right, through diverse teams who are training models to operate in diverse and inclusive ways, right, we're going to have a ton of problems.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. We're going to have a bunch of models that all of their data is going to be based on white men.
Yeah. And so I remember seeing a post on LinkedIn where someone said, look, I used a GPT, right, and I won't mention which one. And I asked the GPT, right, to produce an image of a CEO, right? And the image that came back, right, was to your point, right? Or I asked, the GPT to produce an image of a nurse, and it was automatically a woman, right? I asked the GPT to produce the image of a single mother, right? And that image was of color. And so these are things that we're going to have to watch, right? And we have to correct,
right?
So, and so to repeat, you know, kind of the point, right? Data and training in affects what comes out. And we have to be really thoughtful about all of that.
Yeah. Or we could create just...
Oh, chaos.
Huge mess.
Chaos. Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. And for another day, we can talk about the climate implications of generative AI.
Oh,
right, and the need for electricity, right, in order to run, you know, generative AI solutions, as well as, you know, I've worked in distributed ledger technology, right? And that's a very computing intensive technology. I think a lot about unintended consequences, right, in my work. And generative AI is one of those, as we think about the need for electrification, and most of our electricity comes from fossil fuels. We're going to have to think about the climate implications of these really great technologies that have unleashed a ton of possibility for us, right, but have also created these unintended consequences that we're going to need to surmount.
Yeah, like 100 years from now, what are the server farms going to look like?
Oh, goodness, right. And hopefully we will have server farms 100 years from now, because we will have tackled climate.
Right.
Right.
We'll be here.
Yeah.
100 years from now.
Yes, exactly.
You and I probably will.
Yeah, that's somebody right. Will. Right. Even though longevity is a revolution, so.
yeah. So let's talk a little bit about mental health awareness, which is important. And you have been in some very difficult, highly stressful roles.
Yes.
So with those demanding and diverse roles, what strategies have you found most effective for prioritizing mental health?
Yes. So first you just have to do it.
Right.
Right. Which can be very difficult when you are in the midst of so much and you have so much coming at you. And so, I have a few things that I like to do, right? And I'll use them in terms of themes, right? You want to get stress out, right? And so my husband and I actually go to a boot camp called Orange Theory. We do that together twice a week. And that's where I go to just get it all out, right? And then you have to find ways to let good in. Right. And that can be through, for me, Bikram yoga. Right. That can be taking, you know, a long hike in a forest. We're very fortunate to live near a state forest in Massachusetts, where I love spending time. I also meditate every morning in order to let that goodness in, so that you can stay grounded amidst a lot of the stresses, right, that we face in work and in life.
Right. And I think that's so important. You know, I'm of the generation that when, and certainly you started working in finance.
Yeah.
It was work 100 hours, work 120 hours, work, bill,
yes,
until you're ready to drop. And I think that in general, business has changed to understand that maybe we shouldn't do that to people. I hope that that's the case.
Yeah, I really appreciate millennials and Gen Z for pushing that, right?
Right.
So kind of going back to authenticity, right? You know, I've managed younger millennials and Gen Z, and the authenticity that they bring, right, to the workplace is really astounding, right? And the accountability that they like kind of force
right
on the workplace in order to manage work-life integration is something that I am really proud of, and I love that they're doing it.
Right.
Because you're right. I remember, in my career when I started, it was a badge of honor, right, to sleep 4 hours a night.
Right.
And kind of keep going. Whereas now is a badge of honor to sleep 8 hours a night.
Yeah. And it's funny because I don't tend to interview folks right out of school, just in my role, but I certainly have. But what's interesting is that we have individuals ask us now, can you tell me about the work-life balance?
Wow.
That is not anything I would have ever asked.
Yeah, that's right. Same.
I mean, because you would have in, 15 years ago, you would have been branded as, this person's a slacker.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I can completely relate to that.
And it's interesting because even those folks that have asked those types of questions actually are some of our better employees.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and my immediate perception is, well, you're going to be a slacker, because it's just ingrained in me. But the reality is that you need that downtime.
You do need the downtime. Yes, you need a kind of white space, right, so that your brain can rest. Right, so that your body can recalibrate, right? Your central nervous system can come back into,
right
can kind of come back to itself. And so I agree with you, right? And that's one of the things I've seen too in my career is that really taking time for self, right, improves the work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, and it's the same thing as, you're working really, really hard on a problem and you have to step away.
That's right.
And when you step away,
you get a new perspective.
You get a new perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah. What advice would you give to professionals, young professionals who are just starting out?
Gosh. I would say embrace the learning. Right. It can often feel like your career may not be moving at a pace or in a direction that you may want. But I think it's very important to embrace the learning.
Right.
And so I think that would be my biggest piece of advice.
Right. I find working in technology, so technology tends to attract people who value continuous learning. And we all get really bored.
Yes.
If we're doing the same thing all
day
long every day. And so what I find is that people that are most successful with us want to learn the next new thing.
Exactly.
Even me at 55, I just took a certification in AI.
Which is incredible.
I'm like, I want to do this because it's fascinating to me.
Exactly.
I understand it.
Yeah. It reminds me of, a principle that has pervaded Microsoft and I think been responsible for its wild success.
Right.
Right. Over the last decade with Satya Nadella, CEO. Right, embracing a growth mindset.
Right.
Right. And so it's that kind of growth mindset where you embrace the learning, you embrace the curiosity, you embrace the struggle. That's the advice I would give to young people starting their careers today.
Right, right. And I've seen that with you, having known you for a while now. What I've seen is that you have never lost that entrepreneurial mindset. And again, I think that that's really, really important because if you're always thinking like a startup, you're thinking lean and you're thinking about failing fast and how to grow.
Yeah.
After all you've accomplished, if you could go back and give 12-year-old Glenn some advice, what would it be?
Slow down. It'll all be okay.
I literally just said that yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was given the advice that life can be long, and so remember that, right, even in the tough times.
Right.
right? And I guess the parable or the line that goes right with that is this too shall pass. And so I think that's what I would tell my 12-year-old self. And so that my 12-year-old self could savor life more. My 22-year-old self.
Right.
Right, could savor life more. My 32-year-old self.
Right.
Right, could savor life more.
Stop and smell the roses.
There you go. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thank you for coming in.
Gosh, this has been such a delight. Yeah. So thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you.